Welcome to the SDR Disco Call Vidcast and Podcast, a show designed for brand new sales reps working in the world of tech sales. I'm your host, Neil Buyan, and I'm going to be taking you on a journey on the SDR Disco Call Vidcast and Podcast. Did you know that you can watch this show live with the guests on YouTube? This show is available on YouTube at happyselling.io. Hello, listeners, watchers, and subscribers. Welcome to another chapter, another episode, and another cool story on the SDR Disco Call Show. If this is your first time joining or you're a returning listener and watcher, what is this show all about? So we love the world of tech sales and startups and businesses and around the profession of sales. And there is an element called sales or business development. So these are the people that are typically reaching out to businesses, trying to introduce their services, book meetings, and hopefully make some great sales. And my name is Neil Buyan, your host. And what I love doing is finding really cool people within our industry to learn more about their stories and share insights to help you out in your own sales career and to become what I call happy sellers. If you're listening to this in your local podcast platform, please make sure that you give us a rating and share this episode with anybody that you think could benefit. And equally, if you're watching this on YouTube, make sure that you like, comment, and subscribe down below. So with this beautiful guest that we've got on board today, this is actually somebody that I've been working with for the past year through coaching and my sales coach. And when I met this person back last year, I could kind of see myself within them because they kind of were in a place of where I was in my days when I was a manager back at Zora. But without further ado, I'd love to introduce our guest. Who are you?
Hello, Neil. Thank you for having me on. My name is Shan Perriton. I work at Kainos currently, and I've been in business development for around 10 years in total.
Love it. So we've got a veteran in the game. And Shan, whereabouts in the world are you based?
I'm based in Belfast, which is in Northern Ireland.
Love it. And I actually visited you guys a couple of months back as well, and it's awesome. Highly recommend going out to Belfast, and they've got some cool pubs and great places out there. And Shan, just at a super high level, just so our listeners know, what does Kainos do at a high level?
Kainos provides IT and like bespoke tech applications, but then we also support Workday. So we're a Workday partner, the largest boutique partner for Workday in Europe at the moment. So,
woo-woo, love it. And again, just to give our listeners and people watching today, to give a bit of context, what are the typical personas that you try to help with the job titles of those people?
Yeah, so in my team, in my business unit, we're in the Workday business unit. So we're going after HR personas, we're going after finance personas, and then to a certain extent, we're going after IT personas as well, but mainly C-suites. It's C-suite only, really, to really get in there for those big transformation projects.
I love it. So it's like a C of the C level.
Yeah.
Sorted. You know, a question that I always like to ask my guests, because we like to get to know you a little bit better outside of sales, what are your passions, hobbies? And I know there's a little creative element to you, Shan, but what things do you like to get up to outside of sales?
Yeah, okay. So lots of different things. I think I love cooking, and I love finding new recipes. Sometimes I like to replicate recipes that I've had in a restaurant and I don't want to pay for anymore. Mm. So try my best to kind of reproduce that. I love drawing. Mm. And I play a bit of guitar as well. Ooh. Acoustic guitar. Yeah.
I love that. I love it. And I've actually seen Shan's artwork, and she's an awesome drawer. So freaking love that. And I like the idea of you go to restaurants, you get some really good meals, and then you try to recreate those. I actually do that with my little boy. So he loves a Nando's. He loves a KFC. He loves a Pizza Express. So we, you know, I'll go to the local Asda and I'll buy the ingredients and make daddy versions of that.
Yeah.
And yeah, it works out a hell of a lot cheaper, and it can be a little bit healthier as well.
That's true.
Anyway, I digress. But normally at this point of the show, for our watchers, what we love to do is visit our guests' LinkedIn profiles. And as a reminder, with all of our guests, what you'll be able to do is get their LinkedIn profiles within the show notes, so that if you want to connect with them, ask them any questions, or pick their brains on any of the topics we've discussed today, please feel free to do so. So Shan, checking out your LinkedIn profile, and you know, you post out a lot of great content, especially for the ecosystem of the type of people that you're selling to. And I love the fact that Kainos are really great at social selling and putting some imprints out there, out on LinkedIn land. But coming to your own experience, you know, I can see that you'd worked at Micro Focus, WK Media, you've been at Text Help. You know, for the past 5 years, you've been really building out your leadership career at Kainos. So we would love to know, in your own words, where did it all start? How did you get into and where? How did you end up where you are today, Sian?
Yeah, so I suppose, in a way, I've always been selling since I was, you know, very young. So I think that kind of creative side kind of led me to, you know, creating magazines and trying to sell them to, you know, my friends in the playground. I was a waitress as well for a long time. So working in the hospitality industry, you know, upselling coffees and desserts and things like that. There would be a spiff from time to time that, you know, I was quite competitive too. So always pushing that way. But I moved as part of my university degree to Spain. And I was working as a teacher through the British Council. So I was teaching English to Spanish kids. And it got to a certain point after I graduated, I moved back to Spain again for a second time. And there were no opportunities. This was at the time of, you know, the financial crash, 2000. It was kind of 2000 and there were really no opportunities for me in Spain. So I saw an advert for a graduate scheme with Micro Focus. I applied for it. I had to go and do, you know, like all the psychometric tests and interviews, and it was a full day group interview scenario, so loads of tasks. But at the end of that day, I got offered the job, you know, to be part of this 13-week graduate scheme. I'd never considered tech sales. I'd never considered kind of what we imagine as a traditional sales role, office-based, you know, picking up the phone, cold calling. So it was a bit kind of stepping into the unknown. But it was really, exciting, and it was a great time. That grad scheme was brilliant, and still some of my closest friends today. We met through that graduate program. So that was really how I got my break into sales and the world of tech sales specifically.
I love that. Thank you for sharing. So you know, after you graduate, like you're going off to Spain, you're helping teach children like English out there as well. You've gone back, you've gone through the financial crash, which scarpered a lot of things like pre-pandemic days as well. And then, you know, going to Micro Focus and looking at this opportunity to kind of test something out. And, you know, that was your taste into sales and, you know, getting the job as well. Like, congrats on that. But I'm also curious to know, like, when you're at the cusp of that, of going into Micro Focus, and experiencing that sales sort of culture for somebody that hadn't been through it before, and, you know, teaching was the thing prior to that, what was going through your mind and how did you perceive all of this?
Honestly, I thought I was the big businesswoman. You know, I thought that, you know, this is great. I was kind of really like wowed by the glamour of, you know, the sales program and the graduate program that they put us through. It was, you know, they rolled out the red carpet basically for us and really made us feel special and welcome and provided a lot of recognition and reward as well. After we kind of graduated from the graduate scheme and got into the weeds, it was a bit of a shock. You know, it was a bit of, okay, how do I find, you know, who I'm going to sell to? How do I get in touch with them? I was at that time selling into software testers, testing departments, you know, quality assurance for, you know, internal in-house applications that they would have built.
Yeah.
So they weren't really receptive to, you know, somebody from Northern Ireland picking up the phone, trying to speak to them in Spanish. And, you know, with my personality being, you know, the way it is, it was a challenge. It really was tough. But what was fantastic at Micro Focus was that we had brilliant managers, and they were really at a point where they just wanted to shake things up, get some fresh people in, fresh ideas. So we were really supported in that, which was brilliant. And in all honesty, I didn't want to leave Micro Focus at all. I really loved it. And it felt like I know this is so cheesy, but it did feel like a family. You know, and it was, I suppose you always kind of hold a bit of nostalgia and, yeah. you know, for your first kind of step towards a career. But yeah, it was a really special time. It was tough. It was challenging. I mean, some pipeline reviews were, but it was great. It was really good.
I love that. I love that. And I think a point that you mentioned there is that, you know, you had great managers as well. And I think being a former sales manager myself and obviously with you in leadership, sometimes it's those experiences of great managers that we learn and, you know, it imprints on us and we try to emulate those things when we go into leadership. So we know what good management is. I'm curious to know, like, what were the traits that made you feel like, okay, that manager got me and, you know, they helped and supported me? Because I think we have quite a few leaders that listen to this podcast as well. So what traits are good for management?
I think humor, you know, and it's almost a sense of even if you mess up, there's somebody who's going to call you out on it and hold you accountable, but that appreciates that you're on a learning journey. So I never felt like I was in big trouble or, you know, even though it maybe messed up or, you know, there were a few deals in my pipeline that, you know, were looking a bit dodgy. There was always somebody there who would tell me that straight, you know, and put it to me, but in a way that's like, right, come on, let's do this together and let's, I'll help you. Which was really, really good. And just having that humor, that human element to get rid of the fear and, you know, help you understand that it's not personal. It's to help you develop. And that's something that I try and take that forward, you know, today with what I'm doing.
100%, because I think we've all experienced bad managers and good managers. And I can always remember like my first manager at Zora, a lovely lady called Kat. And she was kind of like my sales mum. You know, she had the empathy. She could pull me up on stuff when I wasn't doing great. And, you know, I think ultimately the one thing I always felt about Kat, because back then I didn't have a lot of confidence in myself, is she believed in me. But she believed in me more than I believed in myself, you know? So when I would come to her and just say, how am I supposed to process 800 inbound leads in a week? And, you know, like, I don't know when I'm going to book my next meeting and stuff. And she'd just give me that pep talk, you know?
Yeah.
But be able to be firm and fair, but also at the same time, she could laugh a lot. And I can remember like when I went out to Cali and she took me out for like sushi first time we ever, when I flew out to Cali. And she's just like saying, and she said, fuck work for a minute.
Yeah.
And she just said, like, tell me a bit about you. Like, what'd you get up to? Like, what's this music thing and everything like that? And then, you know, she'd tell me her stories and everything. And, you know, that stuck with me. And over the years, I always tried to emulate that feeling Kat put into me as well. So I think, yeah, like we learn from the people that we've worked with as well. And we try to put that into our own style. So I'm curious to know, like, after Micro Focus, you had your stints at WK Media and TechSelp. What was that journey like transitioning into those companies?
Yeah, so at WK Media, this was a very, very small Lancaster-based web development firm. So this was a bit of a strange jump. A lot of people would maybe consider it to be a step backwards. And the reason why we went there, why I ended up there, was I had just had my first baby. I'd had my maternity leave. I'd come back. I was working a new territory in Micro Focus. But then my husband, well, fiance at the time, had gotten a place at Lancaster University to become a teacher. And at that time, you know, 2000 and remote working was not really a thing. Everything was office based. So it kind of wasn't going to be possible for me to work remotely from Lancaster for a year.
Yeah.
And at that point, it was like, you know, really, I have to weigh this up. What's more important? And obviously, it was my family, keeping my family together, supporting my partner in what he wanted to do. And I don't know, something that I think is always in me is this sense that everything's going to be okay. Everything's going to work out. We're resilient enough and tough enough to make it work. So I took the jump. We moved over to Lancaster. I found this job, this sales job, and I loved it. I absolutely loved it. It was one of those roles where you're going through the Yellow Pages or Yell and finding plumbers and electricians and dentists and, you know, you name, like dog groomers, you name it. I was picking up the phone to them and selling them a new website or SEO to help them, you know, get found or get ranked higher on Google. And my boss there, a guy called Joe, he was just like an absolute firecracker. He was brilliant. He was one of these through and through salespeople that it was impossible to, you know, argue with. He was going to sell that no matter what. And would have been, you know, when I was on the phone, because again, that confidence thing comes in, whereas in Micro Focus, it was very much about relationship building and long-term sales cycles. And this was, you pick up the phone, maybe there's one, two, max three phone calls, and it's a done deal, you know. So
yeah,
and he would have been coaching me on the sideline, but it was great. I had £2,000 to sell per week, so I had a weekly target.
Yeah,
I hit it, you know, near enough every single week. And that was a massive kind of learning curve for me, because I'd never had to really push for an outcome on a call before. But it was so enjoyable, and getting that sale and writing it up on the whiteboard, you know, it was brilliant. And then, you know, the guy who was actually going to build that website was in the room as well, like on tenterhooks, waiting for, you know, the deal to be done. And he would be like, right, I'm going to go and start working on this. So it was great. Really, really good.
I love that. Because I think it's like, in essence, literally like your call list or your account list was a Yelp Pages like book where you've got all these numbers, and you've got all their numbers and contact details there, right? So it's all verified. And then, you know, you're trying to pitch them and bring them to become more digital, either with SEO and helping building out their website.
Yeah.
But like doing that 360 sales as well, and having a firecracker boss, like that energy and passion. And I can remember the days of going up to the whiteboard, writing, hitting the target and stuff. And, you know, it kind of like builds you into that sales mindset and feeling and vibe and the thrill and the chase. Yeah. I can definitely relate to that. So obviously you then moved into TextHelp. And what was that all about? What was that journey? And how did you make the transition into that business?
So this was, so I was in Wikimedia for about a year, and my husband had finished his degree. That summer, we got married in France. So we were for a full month in France, kind of prepping the wedding and, you know, everything like that. And we were moving back to Northern Ireland. We weren't going to stay in Lancaster because when you've got a baby, you know, you need your mum. You need your mum beside you to kind of help, and your family is so important. So we moved back to Northern Ireland. And for a couple of months, I was just waitressing again, you know, in a new restaurant that had opened up in my town. But that was just kind of while I was looking for my next move into a tech company again. I kind of wanted to go back to the Micro Focus-y type environment.
Yeah, yeah.
So while I was waitressing, I was keeping my eye out. Kainos was definitely in my sights, but I needed a bit of a stepping stone. So they weren't hiring, and I wanted to get some relevant experience. So I took this job with a company called TextHelp, which is, again, a Northern Irish company, but that sells ed tech or, you know, educational technology and assistive technology to help people with dyslexia, people with dyscalculia and things like that. So it was a really good mission. And it was good fun. They had a ping pong table, which I absolutely loved. But in that role, I wasn't selling. I was in an admin role. I was processing, you know, orders and looking after the CRM. So it did feel like, you know, the move to Wikimedia kind of put me back in terms of where I wanted to be. But it was such a fantastic experience and like learning curve for me. And I also just had fun. So it kind of went to TextHelp to bridge that gap to getting into Kainos.
I love that, because there's a lot of things I can relate to, but what I'm kind of hearing is obviously you've got family and life, which is always our priority, right? And there's a theme with teaching with your partner, with yourself as well, that I'm kind of guessing getting there as well. But, you know, where you've got your life moments and being parents, being a mother as well, that's obviously important. We're going to dive into that as well. But you've kind of said to yourself, right, I want to get to that sort of environment again. But as you mentioned, you wanted to kind of have a stepping stone. And that was something similar to myself where, you know, at one point I worked for local government. Then I took a load of temping jobs. And I don't know if temping is still a thing as much as it was when I used to do it. But I used to take admin, like anything, admin jobs, data entry jobs and stuff like that. And the way that I got into sales was, right, I want to get into sales, but I don't have any experience of it. So could I take a temping job that works next to a sales team? So, you know, I was handling the orders, the subscriptions, managing salesforce.com, all of that stuff. And I used to listen to the salespeople. And as people know, history goes, one day I approached the sales director and said, hey, I want to do sales. And, you know, telesales started and all of that. But I like how you were conditioning yourself and getting yourself ready and using stepping stones to get to where you want. Because I think sometimes people think it's a linear thing. They think you just go from point A to point B, but there can be side steps to help you get to where you want to. And as you mentioned, you know, Kainos was on your site and you started off as one of their, you know, biz dev reps. When was it? Back in 2019.
Yeah.
So walk me through. Okay, so you're moving on from text help. You've joined the big boys, which are Kainos in Northern Ireland. What was it like being that rep and what was that experience like?
It was kind of felt a little bit scared for the first time in a long time because it was a very small team. Kainos is in Northern Ireland. It's one of those names, you know, it's Glassdoor, best place to work. It's one of these companies that everybody wants to get into. So just the feeling that I had done it, but now I needed to prove myself was massive. And also it was getting back into the weeds of, you know, what is Workday? How do Kainos actually support? What are the tools that we sell? Why would they care? Really trying to get back into that mindset, because it'd been quite a while since I was thinking that way. But I was delighted. So I was actually, my manager at the time was a guy that I had worked with in Micro Focus. We were part of the same team back then. So and there were only three of us. There was my manager, Kieran, me, and another guy. And basically we were selling across the world. You know, so it was very, very close, very tight-knit team. Our director at the time was really supportive. And I kind of felt like there's nothing's off limits here. There's so many things that we can do, we can try, that we can, you know, improve. And I was really successful in that role. I loved that role and the product that we sold. After a while, it really came naturally. And as that team grew, then I started to, you know, mentor new joiners and things like that. But yeah, it was at the beginning, I was a bit like, oh, here we go again. Like every day's a school day.
Yeah, 100%. It is. It is indeed. So, you know, coming on to what was relatively like a close-knit team, you said like you wanted to kind of prove yourself, you're having to learn everything again, the ecosystem, how, what's our value proposition, how do we sell this cool stuff, you know, to our customers, etc. And as you mentioned, like the team started growing and then you started mentoring people and coaching people. So, you know, there's a lot of different career paths people can make when they start that BD role. And, you know, you could either go into 360 closing sales, you could go into pre-sales, you could go into product market, you could go in all these sort of places. But most people I speak to, they just want to go into that closing role. But you're there then taking like a mentoring and coaching role. Does that stem from your teaching background, or kind of what was like the thought process of, you know what, perhaps leadership might be a place, or, you know, helping people?
I don't think at the time I felt or I thought this is my next step, because I was pregnant, you know, I was going to have my second baby. So my headspace wasn't really, you know, what's my next step or where am I going next? It just felt right. It felt good. I felt happy if I was able to help somebody, or, you know, if somebody had a question or wanted to run through a discovery call practice or something like that. It made me feel good that I was helping them. So I think it might, maybe it's just part of my nature that's something I enjoy. But also, I think I'd made pretty much a conscious decision that I did not want to go back into a closing role until the kids were grown up. Just because I've been there end of year, you know, you're working until midnight trying to get deals across the line, and that kind of pressure.
Yeah.
I decided that, you know, that's not going to be feasible all the time, especially while the kids are young, and I don't want to miss out on them growing up or be, you know, absent. They're not going to care what I've done in my career. They're going to care that I've been able to be there for them. So yeah, that's kind of how I've come along this path into management. Yeah,
definitely. And I think, you know, it's a key point, which again, I want to discuss being a parent whilst working in sales, because I can relate to that, because in my early days where I was an individual contributor before being a dad, you know, I had my sights, I would say I had selfish goals because the only person I really had to care about was myself, right? And, you know, I went into team lead roles and I liked, similar to yourself, I liked helping, coaching people, helping them book their first meeting, helping them create the opportunity, helping them get comfortable speaking to a C-level person on the call when they were feeling intimidated and just saying, dude, this is normal. They're just people. Forget the job title. But I think, you know, 3.5 years deep into my first tech company, that's when I became the father in 2014, and I had Blake. And when I held my son in my arms, my life, my perspective, everything changed. Yeah. I was a completely different person because I had different priorities. But I think sometimes teams, you know, no like discredit to them, sometimes they're not aware of your wants and pursuits and your aspirations because you have a different mindset now. So just, you know, clear examples such as, hey, Neil, like all the lads are going out to the pub at the end of the week for Friday for a cup of drinks. I'm like, nah, dude, I want to get home to my kid. I want to do the bath. I want to do the bottle. I want to do that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Or, you know, if there were off sites, you know, I had to think about, can I go, and leaving Blake with his mum, and, you know, the fear of, I remember once I had to go to Belgium for a week. And it was the first time I had a time away from him, like the longest time ever. And I found that really hard, you know, to do. So before we dive into the actual, you know, the leadership life and how that panned out, I'd like to get your thoughts and opinions on what is it like being a parent, like being a mother, working in sales, Sian?
Honestly, it can be so hectic. It can be so hectic sometimes, but I think that's true for any parent. You know, you've got, like you say, your mindset is different. Your priorities are completely different. And I know that there's things that I need to do, you know, to make things run on schedule and on time and to make sure that they're, you know, fed and clothed and, you know, have everything that they need. My job, I think, will always come second to them. So kind of balancing that can be tricky sometimes because I love my job and I love what I do. And, you know, sometimes I can get so deep into work where I'm like, right, okay, we need to get this done. Here's a deadline. Yeah. And it's kind of trying to pull myself away and be protective of my boundaries as well and say, right, no, now is the time that I need to go and spend some time with them. I need to step away from this because this isn't helping them and it's not helping my relationship with them, which is my ultimate priority. So having that in mind, you know, and especially because a lot of my colleagues don't necessarily have children, you know, in some of them do and they get it, but some people don't. So yeah, it's just having that in mind and just being protective, like I say, of your boundaries and what is important to you.
100%. And I think, you know, in the early days, like when Blake was born, I was theproudestdad.com, right? So if I was working from home and I'm on a Zoom with everybody, like if little Blakey was calling around, I'd pick him up and put him on my lap and I'd be joining, you know, quarterly business reviews or stuff like that. I'd be like, yeah, that's little Neil there. And I was quite cool. But then I did kind of sometimes note that people found it weird. Like, dude, this is a business call, why are you bringing your kids on? So, you know, I've made a conscious effort over the years when I've done sales calls, discovery, coaching, if kids are joining, I'm like, let them join in, you know, they're part of the crew, man, let's have fun, let's have a wave at them. Didn't take it too serious. But, you know, the other things that I noted was it took a while to figure out, but being disconnecting from work and spending the time with your child, because, you know, in the early days, I can remember being in my kitchen in South London, like working on the worktop with the laptop, daddy's doing stuff, deals, updating Salesforce. And he would come up and touch my leg and I'd be like, okay, just hold on a minute. I just need to finish off this thing because I've got work tomorrow.
Yeah.
But, you know, over the years, I'm like, cool, put the laptop down. What is it that you need? What do you want to do? Where are we going to go? You know, getting back to it. And, you know, balancing your personal time and work time. And sometimes companies can demand a hell of a lot of you because, you know, a business might be saying like, we're building a business. One day we're going to go IPO. We need all hands up, like roll your sleeves up. We need you. And I'm like, but when you became a parent, I said, well, that isn't my priority.
Yeah,
I get it. It's your baby, your business.
Yeah.
But I've got this one little here and, you know, time can never be brought back for that as well. And I think the other thing, and I'd love to get your opinion on this, I think when becoming a parent in sales and in leadership, sometimes those parenting qualities come out in your leadership, right? And sometimes it might be an unconscious thing, but there have been moments where I've had to say, no, you're not their dad. Yeah. Like, you know, in the one-to-one where you see the kid trying, you know, and you want to like push them and coach them and push them through. Some people don't like that stuff, you know, but I've been conscious of it, but I'm just curious, like, has that ever happened to you, Sian?
It probably has. Yes, it probably has. But something that I've been kind of working on over the past year and a half is mirroring people and trying to flex, you know, my style, because probably one of my flaws is offering unsolicited advice. You know, I've learned so much through trial and error and all of my experience. So I'm very quick to jump and say, oh, no, you know, do it this way. And, you know, or what you need to focus on is this, that, and the other. I've been trying to step away from that and try and mirror and match energy a little bit more. And then a lot more coaching questions, you know, what is going on? How do you feel about that? What are you thinking? How do you think you can overcome? And then also, anytime there's a problem, putting it to the team or a challenge or, you know, whatever, putting it to the team, how are we going to do this? Like, I don't want to be the one to say, right, everybody get your shoes on. We've got to get here for this time and blah, 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 in a work scenario. So that's something that I'm kind of consciously catching myself on sometimes, because yes, it slips in, of course it does, because you have to be like, right, come on, this is the way, and get that room tidied and all that kind of stuff.
It definitely
creeps in, so it's almost like you have to kind of switch who you are.
You do, and I think the unsolicited advice bit is something that really rings true for me, and it's only something I've learned in the last 2 or 3 years. And it's kind of where I don't switch off work mode when I'm with friends and family. And for anybody that's wondering, what do we mean by unsolicited advice? Is giving your opinion when it's not asked, right? Even though we have the best of intentions with it. And sometimes, you know, friends or family said, no, I'm not one of your sales reps. You don't have to talk to me in this sort of business sort of fashion. I'm just like, I can't help it because this is what I do for life, right? But through therapy, I was advised, Neil, you give the advice because you're passionate about the topic or the person that you're talking to, and you genuinely want to help. So that's where it's coming from, and that's not a bad thing. But the technique that I kind of learned, and it was more in the one-to-ones that I do with my rep, Sian, where I would they would tell me their problems and they expel them, and then I kind of came up with this. I'd be like, "Do you want me to just listen to this, or would you like my advice or opinion on this?"
Yeah.
And sometimes people say, no, I just want to vent it out and just get it out. But there are other people that are like, yes, I want your advice. And, you know, getting into sales coaching, I freaking love it because people want my opinion and they want my advice. So that's the place for it. But when I'm on calls with my mates and I'm hearing them going through troubles in life and stuff like that, I'm like, And my response is, yeah, that's shit. That's tough. And it's so hard to rein back in wanting to say it until they say, so what do you think, Neil? And I'm like, okay, cool. Now you're giving me the permission to give the advice, right?
Yeah. And it's funny, you know, because I hate receiving unsolicited advice. So I don't know why I, you know, jump to give it out. But yeah, exactly.
100%. So, okay, so we've spoken about parenting within, you know, companies and business. Maybe for people, company owners that are listening, what things do you think they should take in mind for their staff that do have the kids and this family life? And that's really important, because I know sometimes businesses make it hard to be a parent. What do you think are the things they should consider?
You know, I can't speak for every company or, you know, leaders, but in Kainos, it is so flexible and it's so supportive. So I feel very, very lucky that I can, you know, just text my boss and say, look, I have to push this out, or this is what, you know, I have to be off today because my kid is sick, or things like that. But just that kind of understanding on a personal level, you know, we're not all going through the same thing all the time. Things change and it's about teamwork and supporting everybody. And I think that kind of comes into that, you know, equity conversation, that the support that you can't just give, you know, your team of 10, each person exactly the same support and the same rules and guidelines. It's how do we support each person individually to get them, to get the best out of them and make them happy and, you know, feel safe and secure in their job. And I have to say, like in Kainos, I totally feel that, you know, it's been
good.
It's been probably easier than some people have it. And I feel very grateful for that.
And that's great to hear. So that's definitely a reminder, the understanding that, you know, humans are humans. You can't predict when somebody's going to be sick or you have to go pick up your kid because they've smashed their head up wall at school.
Yeah.
And you have to down tools or anything. And like, I'm not going to mention any names, but I had a bad experience once. So working within a tech company, had my kid and, you know, I was on paternity leave for 2 weeks. So as men in the UK, we get 2 weeks off, right? And I remember once I was joining QBR and they're talking about the numbers and there was obviously like a dip in pipeline and it was summer. So, you know, sometimes seasonality affects pipe and everything. But the comment made by one of the executives was along these lines that I'm paraphrasing here, is there was a dip in pipeline and also Neil had to take out 2 weeks because, you know, he had a kid. And I think that's one of the major factors as to why the pipeline dropped. And I just sat there like, so it's my fault because I had a kid that the pipe dropped. And that really got me. So, you know, when I've had team members that firstly tell me, hey, Neil, I'm pregnant or I'm having a kid, I'm like, yeah, and I give them a big hug. And but I can also sometimes, I know when that conversation's happening, Sean, when somebody says to me, I need to tell you something, then I'm like, it can only be two things. You're either leaving or you're having a kid, right?
Yeah.
And I make a conscious effort. As soon as they told me we're having a kid, I hug them. And I'm like, it's such a cool thing. Like, welcome to the club. It's freaking hard, dude, but well done.
Yeah.
But, you know, I also help them prepare for the time off they're going to have from work. So I get them into the mindset of, right, let's do like a handover sheet, all the things you need covered whilst you're away. Because when you come back, I don't want you to just dive in. And I even talk about a plan of helping them transition back into it once they come back from paternity or maternity leave, right? So that's that's really important and something I've strived to do as a manager. But coming back to yourself and leadership, could you maybe just walk us through what was that transition like into leadership and, you know, like hosting and managing like 5 to 6 like SDRs? What was that journey all about, Sean?
It's been a gradual process over the past kind of 2.5 years. So I came back from maternity leave after having my second, back into the same role that I was in, but there was you know, a couple of changes happening within that team. So a manager had left, there were 3 people that were needing onboarding. They had just joined when he had just left, and so I had kind of stepped in and tried to rally people up a little bit to make sure that everybody had everything that they needed, and also give them a good experience and not a worrying experience, because, you know, when there's changes like that and you're just new in the door, it could be kind of scary. Like, what have I come to? So I was kind of onboarding them and, you know, mentoring them a little bit about the way we were doing things. And then I was approached by the RVP of EMEA, but for Workday services. So previously I was in product. We sold a product to Workday customers. And then I was approached by the RVP of EMEA, a guy called Reiner, to do the same thing, but for services. And I was like, right, okay, you know, I can definitely spend a bit of time. And he was like, well, no, we're going to need a lot more time. I'm thinking 100% of your time focusing on services. So I was like, right, you know, how is this going to work? That was kind of in at the deep end. And I thought about it and I kind of had agreed. And then I think I got cold feet. So the manager position for the product team, it came up because the guy had just left. So I kind of knew very well what I was talking about, knew the structure, knew the team, knew everything. And I was like, well, I'll just do that.
Yeah.
But then he kind of came and gave me a pep talk and was like, look, you could either just steer the ship that's already there, or you can build one and you can make that your own. And just that really gave me pause to reflect. And I called a guy that he actually delivered the graduate program whenever I was back in Microfocus. So I think just another side note about maintaining relationships and you know, asking for help when you need it, because at that point I had no idea, do I go left or do I go right, you know, blue pill, red pill type thing. And I was scared. I was like, this is going to be a big thing, because previously we just relied you know, on Workday and those relationships in region to say, okay, this customer needs this, or here's a project to go and implement. But Reiner's kind of plan was, we want to be the masters of our own destiny. So we're going to need to go and find our own business and give that to Workday, because part of our goal was, you know, we want to be the most valuable Workday partner in the entire ecosystem. And it's a big ecosystem. So that's kind of, you know, why they wanted me to do this. I did it for, you know, 3 months kind of by myself. Middling results. I mean, really, we didn't have a clue where to even begin, because it's ERP. You can sell it to anybody. So then after a couple of months, I got two new hires, a girl that I'd worked with previously in Microfocus called Maureen, who has just had her third baby. So congratulations to Maureen.
Congratulations, Maureen. Yay!
He's so cute. And Fiona. So we kind of split, you know, the region up between ourselves. We split EMEA into three. We were doing a lot of webinar promotion, roundtable promotion. And we kind of were doing okay, but it reached a certain point in the year where we were like, okay, we're not going to hit our target here, girls. Like, what are we going to do? So there was a lot of trial and error, you know, coming up with different sequences, looking at intent data, looking at, you know, situational kind of triggers, going after people who had mergers and acquisitions, like trying to really think outside the box, because it was all just, you know, promote this webinar, promote this event, follow up on it, which wasn't getting us, or working off a static list. You know, this is a list of accounts, go and pick up the phone to them. Which, you know, when you've got things like sales, really those tools allow you to think outside the box and hit more of the people who are in market at the right time. So whenever we implemented that, you know, all was good. We hit our target. We were really kind of proud of ourselves for getting there, because at certain points throughout the year, it was hairy, but it was it was a proper team effort. And at no point did I ever feel like, again, that we were going to be in trouble. The support that I had from my leadership at the time was amazing. And talking about good managers that we were talking about earlier on, those good experiences. My manager at the time, a guy called Stefan, was just the best. Doors always open. Let's do this together type attitude. So yeah, it was good. But it was trial by fire, you know, getting there. And then we grew the team again, you know, maybe. And then whenever we started to grow the team, there were, again, every day's a school day, so much to learn, because I felt real trust and confidence with Fiona and Maureen, but then I'd hired, you know, a remote rep, as somebody, again, someone who was based down south, and trying to manage these other guys who didn't really, you know, I'd never experienced that before. So there was a lot for me. I had my first experience of managing, you know, poor performance that I'd never, I wasn't expecting, because I thought, I just kind of naively believed that everybody shares the same passion and drive as me.
You're right.
Not the case. So lots of moments where I was like, okay, what am I learning from this? What am I taking away from this? How am I going to improve things next time? And what should I be on the lookout for? And stuff like that. So fast forward to today, you know, we've got a team of five SDRs. It's such a great team. I really love my team. And I think I think we all care about each other, you know, just beyond work, and we all have a really good relationship and do share that kind of passion, that wanting to make a difference, wanting to make things better, either for ourselves, each other, our colleagues, for work day, all that kind of stuff. So it's a great team, and I feel very lucky that they bring a lot to the table. You know, they bring a lot of ideas.
I love that. And they're very lucky to have you as a manager, Sean, and I'll dive into the whys in a moment. But to kind of recap that story, it's really cool. So, like, you know, here's a new opportunity for you to go into management, but where you kind of got cold feet with it as well. You were able to reach out to people for help, get a bit of a pep talk. And, you know, I love that where, you know, you can either steer the existing ship or you can help build a new ship with a new crew behind it and everything like that. And hearing you working with Maureen and Fiona, like working together, testing the market, like trying these accounts and everything, it kind of just makes me think it was like you had like your own mini startup within the business, right? It's a new business unit and you're kind of three co-founders trying to figure out what's the market and going through there.
Yeah.
And, you know, with a lot of startups that I've worked with, this is typically how it starts. It's maybe two or three co-founders together. And one will go off into product, one will get into more the tech side of it, or, you know, the customer relationship, and one may be that CEO that leads that team. They're the visionary. And, you know, the things that come with leadership, remembering your point there where not everybody's like me or has that same want or drive that I may have. And you learn a lot of different personalities and you're thrown into a lot of different situations, which can make you feel uncomfortable. And, you know, at points you can start questioning yourself, like, am I the bad manager or have I done something wrong? Because what you're trying to do as a leader is you're trying to help people grow. But what you have to do is then start studying different types of people, their desires, their wants, their drives, their motivations, and everybody's built up differently. So, you know, I had to learn that not everybody's motivated by money.
Nope.
Not everybody is motivated by booking the meeting. Some people just love it when the deal closes, or some people love the art of just booking the meeting. That's why I didn't really give a damn too much about the money. I was like, I just want to book the logo that nobody else has got.
Yeah.
You know? And, you know, building that team and people come and go. And there are many points where I know I've had difficult hires and where people were, you know, we've gone through the interview and I've learned everybody puts on a persona at the interview. They give the best version of themselves. And then when you're like 3 months into the job and we're nearing probation, like, oh my God, like this, like, I didn't think they were this type of person.
Yeah.
And sometimes you have to have very hard, you know, conversations. But, and, you know, I've had many times in my career where I've almost burnt out because I've cared too much.
Yeah.
I've had times when I've been on tears at my desk thinking like, how am I going to do this? Like, I'm a shit manager and all of these things. But I think the key thing is the asking for the help piece.
Yeah.
Because I think sometimes when we're filling into these big shoes, we may have this sense of we have to be perfect and we have to get everything right. But it's not the case. Yeah. We learn and we get burnt as we go along. But the point where I'm saying to the audience here is like why they're a great team and they're very lucky to have you. And the reason I say that is because for the past year, we've worked together where I've been your sales coach.
Yep.
And, you know, I can remember our first call. So obviously I got sent the notes as to your profile, what you're looking for help and everything like that. And again, I'm not going to dive into details because that's private. But just, I remember saying to my sales coach team, I said, she reminds me of me when I started out as Zora. And I remember I was so excited to get onto our call because I was just like, I really want to help this person. And when you came to me with your ideas, your needs and wants, and, you know, there's been some good times and there've been some hard times with it as well. But it was just nice and refreshing to speak to somebody that was open to help and wanted the help, but also came with their own ideas, really cared about the team. And, you know, ultimately just wanted to test things out.
Yeah.
And, you know, the months as we've caught up, I'm just hearing, okay, you're doing this, you're doing that, great things are happening, you're thinking big, you're being bold, you know, all the things that Kainos Light is built for, right?
Yeah.
But what did it mean to you in terms of having a coach? And, you know, we have coaches internally as well as externally, but let's just say a manager's listening to this show.
Yeah.
And they're looking for that coach, either in their business or externally. What things should they look for a coach to help them as a leader?
Do you mean what qualities would they look for in a coach? Well, first of all, I would say coaching over this past year has really, it's changed my mindset. It's because I think before I was maybe suffering, not from burnout, but from that kind of inferiority complex of, I need to know everything. I need to be, like you say, I need to be perfect. This is my job and I want to, you know, excel at it and prove how great I am. But really, I was right at the beginning of my management journey and I didn't have any answers. I really didn't know anything apart from what was my own lived experience. So having somebody on hand that I can be completely open and honest with, I mean, there's no kind of judgment, which is great. And there's no kind of fear, you know, because I think internally sometimes you might not want to be completely honest. You don't want to scare somebody that you're, you know, about to jump off or, you know, because sometimes it can feel that way before you've kind of talked through and processed your feelings. Certainly for me, I need to, while I'm talking through, I'm still kind of processing it. And that's how I would kind of process how I'm feeling. Otherwise, it stays bottled up in a big jumbled mess. So somebody who's got no judgment, somebody who's a good listener, somebody who kind of see the bigger picture and remind you of that, and somebody who's got some experience, you know, lived experience that they can share, who's maybe been a bit further down that path and knows what could be ahead, is really, really, really valuable.
I love that. Thank you. Thank you for sharing. And, you know, like saying it out loud as your coach, I've like seen you grow over the year and the amazing things that you've done on a personal level, but also like for your team. And, you know, I had the privilege back end of last year where, you know, I actually got to meet you after a year face to face, like with you and your team at Kainos, like where you did like an SDR day event alongside the wider team. And do you know what? Just walking into your offices in Belfast, it's just the energy in the room, like everybody working together. And I just sat there, as you can see, right in the background, because I like to be in the background. But I just sat there proud of you, dude, because I was just like, you've created this like environment. You've created this, helped create this team. You've got some great people in there that, you know, you've done this all together. And I just sat back and I was just like, yeah, I'm proud of the lady. But like for that event, that was like the first of the SDR event. And I think it's important for leaders to know, why should you have events or days for your SDRs? What's your kind of advice on that?
I think if you're not getting, you know, together in Kainos, we've got different SDRs who are focused on different products, different regions, you know, and it's very easy now with remote working to be sitting in your silo and you've got blinkers on and you're like, right, I need to make my calls. I need to send all these emails. I need to do this, that, and the other. And you're not lifting your head up and you're not coming in and just bouncing ideas off people who are in the same position as you. You're not sharing success because you don't know about it because you're just purely focused on your thing. But there's a community actually out there that can help you. And we're not trying to be, you know, sales influencers or, you know, these people that are like, you know, 10x your reply rates. We're there to share the good, the bad, and the ugly. Those war stories, you know, help us all and bring us all together. And so that's why kind of going forward, we're going to be running these SDR days on a quarterly basis. So, you know, bringing external speakers in, people who can share some kind of practical hands-on tips, but then also give the SDRs the floor as well to share something that they're really proud of that they've done, with the hopes to inspire the new ideas, because, you know, there's so much new technology, there's so much change, buyer behavior has changed, and it continues to do so. So trying to stay on top of that when you've got your day-to-day is really hard. So yeah, I think I'm excited for the year ahead. I'm excited and happy that we're starting to build those connections between SDR teams within our own company, just with a view to help each other out, which is one of Kainos' values, you know, is working with others, developing others. So yeah, it's exciting.
I love it. I love it. And I think, you know, like being part of this event, it was freaking awesome. So for context and to kind of set the scene. So, you know, Sean, you invited myself to come over. You had some other speakers in there. But I think what was really cool here is that you had your team And then you had your counterpart, Frank's team as well. So I hadn't met any of them before. But here you had an opportunity to get these guys together in the same room.
Yeah.
Because in essence, they are doing the same role of trying to, you know, get new businesses. And truth be told, I remember like David Meyer. So obviously he came to do like a presentation. You had the crew from LinkedIn.com come in to share some best practices. And you had little O'Neill like sharing all of his stuff. And I sat there and just thinking, isn't this amazing that you've got all these people in here? You're investing your time for your team and the wider team to help them learn and to help them grow. And I think it was a ball of fun. So, you know, truth be told, I was nervous as hell. I'd come over to Belfast for the first time. I'm meeting all these people in real life for the first time instead of a Zoom. I'm seeing like these two big speakers ahead of me. And I'm sitting there with my little laptop that, you know, I did my presentation the night before in the hotel, just getting it all ready. And I was like, my mouth was dry when we were talking. But, you know, towards the end of it, the amount of discussions that were going on in that room between teams, you and Frank sitting down, David coming over, and people coming up to me and saying, so what do you think about this? And then just seeing them practice their pitch, it just caused it like set the bar of the type of energy that you want in that team. And I think it's really cool the way that you put that together. And again, I was very proud. Like when I walked off and, you know, I came back to London and the team asked me, so how was Kainos? I was like, it was bloody amazing. It was so fun. It was so cool.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think it's key for leadership to put on these events for the SDRs. Because I remember back in the day, I didn't have SDR days. I was joining sales boot camps that were designed for the A's and the 360 closers, talking about methodology and stuff. Like, there was no fun to it. And, you know, sometimes it got to a point where the trainers would say to us, okay, this isn't for the SDR, so there's no point of you coming to this part of the session.
Yeah.
And I used to feel really like outed by that. So I think what you did, and it's freaking amazing. And again, if you ever need a speaker, I'm your boy, let me know.
Absolutely.
I love that. So look, this has been an absolute awesome discussion. I'm so glad that you've come on the show today, Sean. But the question that I like to ask all of my guests. So imagine you're going way back in the day where you're thinking about, okay, where should I go? How should I start this career? You know, I've got kids on the way, traveling and all of that. What three bits of advice would you have loved to give that Sean, that younger Sean who's just about to embark on that journey?
Yeah, well, I would tell her, be patient. It's definitely one thing. I would tell her, always be learning. If you're not learning, you're dead, you know, and there's always going to be something else that you're going to need to get your teeth stuck into. And the third piece of advice, oh, it's so tough. Everything's going to be okay. Everything's going to be okay.
Everything's going to be fine.
Yeah. It's all going to be all right.
And I love that. So that's all true advice. And I think one bit that I'd like to add on to that, if that's all right, is the best way to learn is to teach. Because when you learn something for the first time and then you start teaching others how to do it, that's how you learn it over time and it imprints within your mind. So, you know, teaching is great. And that's kind of like what we've been doing, right, for like the last year or so. Well, anyway, I wanted to say a massive thank you to our listeners, watchers, and subscribers for joining us on Sean's story today. So again, if you're listening to this in your local podcast platform, please make sure that you give a rating and share this with anybody that you think could benefit from Sean's story today. And if you're watching this on our YouTube channel, make sure that you like, comment, and subscribe. And write down below, like, are there any thoughts of what did you think about this episode? Do you have any similar experiences to what Sean has gone through? Or do you have any questions? And also, you know, her LinkedIn profile will be in the show notes if you want to connect with Sean and find out more or pick a brain. And also to say, Sean is always hiring.
Yep.
So, you know, if you want Sean as a manager and you're based out in an eye, then by all means, let her know. But Sean, again, thank you so much for joining us on the show today. I wish you an awesome week ahead and 2024. And I look forward to seeing you in our next coaching session.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Neil, for having me.
Thank you for listening to the SDR Disco Call podcast today. We would like to get this message out to more and more sales development reps, so please like, comment, and share in your local podcast provider. If you don't want to miss a show, you can always send a blank email to sdrdiscocall@bcast, which is bcast.email, and you'll be added to our mailing list. We're also on the lookout for new guests. So if you work in the world of sales development as an SDR, BDR, MDR, or ADR, and feel that you have an important message or story to share, feel free to email us at podcast@happyselling.io, and we'd love to have you on board.